The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 143. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? What's going on?
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
What up?
Brian Munjoma.
Yo.
Brett Murdoch.
Hey, everybody.
And Adam Vale.
What's up, what's up?
All right, hope everybody's having a good... You know what's weird? It feels like a holiday, but it actually isn't. It's just summer, and it's weird. You know?
Summertime.
It's insane, man. All right, I don't really have any, like, filler stuff, so let's just jump into it, man. Okay, so for the last, like, ever since it came out, basically, or even before that, you know, we've been talking about the Nintendo Switch, right? Me and Chris specifically weren't really exactly sure if this thing was going to be a success or not. Chris, man, I think we may have to eat a little bit of crow because the financials. I think you should have used the boom, you know. So the financials came out for the last quarter, which is the area from April to beginning of April to end of June. And apparently the system has sold or shipped probably 4.7 million worldwide, right? Which is fucking crazy. Legend of Zelda shipped like close to 4 million. The number two game was Mario Kart 8. Number three game was fucking 1-2 Switch. Number four game was ARMS, which is crazy considering it just came out last month. And for all intents and purposes, it seems that the Switch is a success at the moment. And again, because I will perfectly admit when I'm wrong about shit, I predicted 4 million sales total by the end of the year. So 5 million now. Things are going to be interesting by the end of the year. And now Nintendo has changed their projections. They believe they're going to sell 10 million by the end of March 8, 2018, right? That's still a far cry from the 16 million analysts were predicting. But there you have it. You know, got to give props to words due, I guess. But very interesting shit. So, Chris, I want to go straight to you because you haven't really said too much. You've kind of been waiting for, you know, the show to actually speak about this. So I release the go.
Yeah, well, they seem to have done rather well. So here, let me share my screen a second. Okay. So this was CNBC's report on their latest financials. So this is for Q1 2018, which ended at the end of June. You could see that this is their revenue generation versus expectations. Now, this is just money they made versus money that guys like Michael Pachter and everyone else thought they would make, right? So they beat their earnings and they beat their forecast in terms of operating profit. So I'll explain all those terms in a second. So the article is mostly going into what Tony just said. Sold 4.71 million. I think sell versus ship is still getting confused here. They don't have... A precise sales numbers for each region. These are all ship numbers, but they get paid on shipments, so that really doesn't matter. And let me go to financial report itself. So this is the latest financial report that they released. You could see 3-month period ending June, and they compare it to last June, right, which was pretty poor. That was still back in Wii U days in the dark times. And so if you compare it to last year, this is where that 150% increase in profit comes from. To put it into context, last year at Q1 2017, they were operating at a loss. So when you see this in parentheses here, that's a negative number. So they lost over 5 billion yen in operating profit this time last year. And ordinary profit, that's when you take your... ordinary profit is without subtracting all your cost of marketing, sales, and taxes and stuff. So you can see it's a tremendous loss, right? Compared to this year, at this time now with the switch in play, the numbers are almost reversed. And in fact, their net sales, you know, even though it says 148% increase, as you can see in terms of millions of yen, it's more than double what it was this time last year. So the Switch is doing rather well. They've also had an increase in mobile sales. So I'll go down to the financial notes and just explain what's happening. So they go into the game breakdown. Here's Zelda Breath of the Wild. So they said they're adding both Switch and Wii U versions, right? So that's they've got 3.92 million units so far. They talked about Fire Emblem Echoes for 3DS. Let's see. Software sales, 5.85 million units. So that's pretty good. It said it was below expectations, but that's still a lot of copies of Fire Emblem. I was kind of surprised. They go into the mobile stuff. And this is something I wanted to point out. So 9 billion yen income just off of mobile.
Fuck.
Right? So it says 450% increase since last year, right? So their mobile stuff is doing rather well. And this is just from the introduction of a few titles like Fire Emblems. I don't know if the Professor Layton game is out yet, but that was supposed to be coming from mobile. Also, the revenue still from Pokemon Go. I don't know who's still playing that, but somebody must be. They're still making money from it.
Didn't they do that big event? They just did that big event in like Chicago or something.
Yeah, they're still doing stuff. I mean, I don't know what the drop-off rate is. I don't pay attention to that game. But yeah, it's still generating revenue for them. I mean, they only get a third of it, but it still seems to be a substantial number. So their sales looking pretty good. Their forecast obviously has shareholders excited because their securities went up. So, and that's, I think, because of the Super Nintendo Classic. So they talk about it here in this paragraph. You can see that most of their upcoming titles they announce are for 3DS, right? So they're launching the 2DS XL this month or next month. Was it supposed to be this month? Yeah, I thought it was, but I could be wrong. But it's supposed to come out soon.
Wait, what's going on now? I was talking to Rico in the chat when it was supposed to happen this month.
Oh, the 2DS XL.
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I could have sworn I saw a review of it.
Right.
So it's coming, yeah.
So it's coming. And then so you have titles like Hey Pikmin and the sequel to Sun and Moon for Pokemon and Metroid Samus Returns. So those are all in the forecast. But the biggest part of the forecast is obviously the Super Nintendo Classic. So they talk about it right here. And how they're focusing more on smart devices, which is smart since it's generating so much money for very little work put into it. So I'll go down. I'll show you their revenue compared to last year. So very important numbers you look at on a financial report. Cash and deposits is how much money Kimishima could actually dive into like Uncle Scrooge. That's how much cash they have on hand. You want to think about it that way. And they had a gain of almost 40. Let's see. What would that be? 40 billion yen compared to just March. This is the end of their fiscal year. That was only 3 months before this report, right? So they're making pretty good money right now, and it's turning things around. Now they had the reason the number right here in total current assets is lower than March is because their accounts receivable and trade receivables dropped by half. So they must not have debts from retailers and other people who owed them money before. That must be all paid off. So that's where they had to drop. They also had a short drop in securities. I guess maybe they sold some stock. I'm not sure why that is. Inventory is obviously double because they dumped the Wii U for the Switch. So that's why the inventory number is up. And so that explains this total number. And as you can see, overall, this number is important, cash and deposits. So that's how much money they have on hand. And total current assets, while they lose accounts receivable, that's not as important as a gain in profit and cash on hand. So that cash on hand is very important. I won't go into their liabilities and stuff. This is taxes and all the stuff that they owe, which is not too much different than March. So I'll go into their profit margin. So two numbers that you pay attention to here. Don't pay attention to gross profit, right? Because you always have gross profit is just looking at how much money they made, right? You look at operating profit, which is how much money they made gross minus all the costs that they had to put into to make that money, which is marketing, sales, shipping, all that stuff, which is this line here, selling, general, administrative expenses. You deduct that and you get operating profit. And you can see this time last year, they were in the hole. That's 5 billion yen in the hole, right? Negative. This month, they're at 16.2 billion in operating profit. So that's pretty good. And you can see how, see these somber numbers over here? This is what I was talking about the last time I broke down the whole fiscal year report. So this time last year, you had an ordinary profit and total loss of 38.6 billion yen, right? That's huge, right? And then this year, right, the fortunes turn around, you're at almost 31 billion yen in ordinary profit. And so that they're doing pretty well, like much better than I expected. And you can see their profit margin has completely flipped. Like if you look at these two columns, they're almost mirror images of each other in terms of negative and positive, how much they've turned around the monetary losses they were suffering just last year. And even compared to the end of the fiscal year, now that we had three solid months of the switch on the market, and then you have news coming out of E3 and everything they've announced, not only their shares have gone up, but they have made considerable profit. And I'm really surprised at it considering the shortage of the Switch, how well it sold versus like how many are seemingly not available for anyone to buy. And you know, it's just it's rather impressive. Like that's all I can say about it.
Yeah, I'm looking at these numbers here. It's like a complete turnaround, which is insane. But it's also what we talked about. Like they put the Switch out there at this time to turn shit around, you know, and it worked. Mm-hmm. It totally worked, you know, pretty crazy. I do want to get Brett. I want to get you in here because you're like our big Nintendo guy now. What do you make of all this?
Oh, I don't really need to say anything.
Do you feel vindicated?
I do feel vindicated. Yeah. You know, I think honestly the market didn't know what to make of a lot of this. There it is. And you know, I could use this opportunity to tell people I told you so and everything like that, but I'll be honest with everybody. I didn't expect to like my Switch. I bought my Switch for Zelda, which I still maintain is a system selling game, and I've strangely enjoyed it since then, and my enthusiasm for it has been infectious to those around me. So to be honest, it's not like I was sitting there saying like, oh, well, I knew this was going to happen. Like it caught me by surprise. It just, the bug bit me a little bit more. And I happen to see it growing in circles, and I see the interest that it's generating, and I don't know what it is. It's an enjoyable little thing, and that actual delivery, as opposed to the approach that the Wii took, where everybody was really excited about it, and they got their hands on it, and everybody was like, yeah, I mean, it's good, but so it's I'm not surprised, but I was surprised when it happened to me. And so I kind of expect that to see this continue to go on. And I expect their main concern right now is going to be manufacturing and keeping supply up. But this is kind of where I expected it to be. And I, you know, to a certain extent, I'm not surprised. So I guess I told you so, but I can't really take a lot of credit for it, like I said, because fuck, that shit caught me by surprise too. It just, it caught me by surprise earlier than it caught a lot of other people by surprise.
I do need to remind you, Brett, that this is Throwdown. So if you want to gloat, please gloat.
Okay. I mean, I will say this, like I have been, you know, withstanding a flurry of people telling me that I'm retarded and that this is never going to catch on. It's never going to catch off. And this is going to be Nintendo's death throes. And I definitely have weathered the storm, and I'm coming out looking nice and shiny. So y'all remember this and put it up there with my my Shenmue and Final Fantasy predictions and all that. So remember, every once in a while, I do know what I'm talking about. But that, I, you know, the other thing I will say is, you know, my counterpoint in a lot of this has been Chris, and Chris has come from a place of an immense amount of research and knowledge. So just because this fencing match may have gone in my favor, I still kind of tip my hat in respect to you, Chris. You came strong. You came logical. You made sense. I would say nobody saw this coming, but I did.
Yeah. No, I didn't. And, this is my last little graph here.
Yeah, I see the graph in there, brother.
This is updated from an editorial I did a while ago. I put in all the data from the end of their fiscal year in 2010 till now. So the graph turns out 2012 was obviously a really bad year for them, right? Going from Wii to Wii U was like a tragedy in terms of these numbers. And you could see they were like kind of floundering here. You notice this graph is trending downward but kind of bouncing, and that's because of 3DS and announcements and different things they were doing to try to stay afloat and bring the ship around. But the Wii U was just not doing anything, and this is their cash flatlining, and then it's coming back. And then you have this, which is trends up because of 3DS being kind of strong. They sold their stake in the Mariners and things like that, so they brought their operating profit up. So if you were to put another bar here for fiscal year 2018, if things keep up like this, what this report is showing and their projections into the future, if you were to say if this continues geometrically straight, or not geometrically, like, you know, it's just straight, yeah, from this forward for the next three quarters, you're going to get this line almost back to where it was in 2010. It might reach like somewhere around here.
That would be huge.
My question is that possible? I'm going to move the conversation forward a little bit. Brett briefly touched on it. Okay, so obviously, you know, we can't really dispute the fact that Nintendo had a great 2017, right? It's all right there. My question is, after Super Mario Odyssey, what's going to be on the system to keep that momentum going? And I am specifically asking about confirmed shit, not things we think are going to come out. Like, confirm wise, what the fuck is going to keep this thing going? What's going to keep it? What's going to keep the momentum going? Because I'm honestly like at a loss for it. I'm like, I don't know what's going to keep, like, okay, we know there's probably going to be a Pokemon. Who the fuck knows when that's going to happen? Metroid 4 is coming sometime. Smash Brothers, who knows? What's going to keep this thing going? And let me just add one more question, and you guys take it. Can this thing keep the momentum going without third party support? Go ahead.
One thing I want to point out to people is that, and I know I'm kind of jumping on the hype bandwagon here, I'm not even a big Pokemon fan, but I will say this. A lot of the previous Pokemon games were made, or at least coded and then downgraded from higher quality assets. So a lot of the framework could be in there to get a mainline Pokemon game not out, but you could have news for it and show something for it right about the time Nintendo is going to come up on a drought. I mean, March of next year, you might start hearing rumblings of it, and it'll probably end up being delivered in winter, holiday season of next year, would be my guess if they are trying to absolutely fast track this. You touched on a lot of games. We're probably going to see a lot of ports from Wii U. There's a lot in the Wii U library that hasn't been exploited yet. And this is one of the very few times where that's a realistic option, because nobody fucking played the Wii U. So if you bring out the Wii U Smash, you'll actually see some support for it. So they can use that to kind of, you know, stagger. And I'm sure that they'll do first and third party, but they'll also stagger new plus old games. We shouldn't really expect to see a full-blown, brand-new, made-from-scratch Switch game any quicker than, I'd say, at the top end, maybe every 3-4 months. So, but the other thing I think is, you know, Nintendo has been very, very careful about what they announce and when. They've been slowly kind of metering things out. So even if they had things coming down the conveyor belt, I don't think they'd be talking about next year, because they want to be talking about Mario right now. And then after Mario hits, then they'll start to let us know, oh, well, this other thing is coming up, and they'll start the hype train, and we'll probably see a lull of 2 to 3 months where it's either supported by ports or third-party games, and then we'll, you know, see some more stuff about first-party stuff. And That's how I generally, I think Nintendo's going slow and steady to win this race.
All right.
No, I don't.
Go ahead. Yeah, Carlos, I was just about to call on you too, Mick, because you and I have been talking about this, and you have a different view on this.
Yeah, I don't think it'll sustain it. Like I, unlike Chris and Tony, like I agreed with them about that Nintendo was not gonna succeed with the Switch overall, but I didn't agree with them when it came to their predictions about it ending so soon and like starting off really horrible. I always expected it to start off pretty well, but and the reasons like, and I know, and Brett has his time to shine because yeah, he was right about it, but the reasons we made for why this would not succeed are still valid in my opinion. So and that still goes through to the future. So
can you?
I'm
name
not denying that. I didn't win the game. I'm just doing a touchdown dance. That's all. That's all.
Yeah. Carlos, can you name some of those things that you say are still in play?
Yeah, like the lack of third party support. We're like AAA third party support. So like we're not gonna get Destiny 2. We're not gonna get the new Call of Duty. We're not gonna get the new Battlefield whenever that comes out. I don't know. Is Battlefront going to come out for the Switch?
No,
I know. It might be an ironic question, but I need to ask it.
It isn't.
So, and we're getting the lower tier of all the sports franchises from EA and FIFA. 2K. Yeah. So yeah, like it's one of those things where how much can first party carry the Switch? Like we know that the first party seems pretty well right now, but we just got this year we're getting two of the biggest hitters Nintendo has to offer. That's Zelda, Breath of the Wild, and Mario, and you can even throw Splatoon into that. Like how much bigger can you get than Mario and Zelda and Splatoon? Like
Pokemon.
But I was going to mention that later on.
Yeah.
Pokemon. Let me just mention, Pokemon is a trump card for anything. Like, if I'm saying, yeah, the Switch is not going to do well in 2018, but like if they mention, oh, we're releasing Pokemon in the summer, then you can just cancel everything I say because Pokemon just fucking moves fucking everything. But yeah, so like as far as I'm concerned, like I think all the things that Nintendo has offered is pretty important to Nintendo fans. Nintendo fans are all satisfied. They're all buying the systems. Like even the skeptical Nintendo fans like Brett or the optimistic Nintendo fans that bought the Switch are all like converted into what they deem as like a really well-made console that has all the games they want to play in. But for people outside of the Nintendo sphere, like people who like bro gamers who play Call of Duty, play sports games, they play competitively.
Xbox gamers.
Yeah, yeah. Xbox gamers and a lot of PC gamers and a couple of PS4 gamers. Like they don't have a place with a Switch. I don't know how we can sell them on Metroid Prime 4. For example, that's one of the most anticipated games that might come out next year. I don't know when that's going to come out, but it's like one of those games that's not going to sell the system. So I always wonder, is Nintendo's strategy to just release a whole bunch of first party games, like little droplets throughout the year, and let that carry the system through the whole life cycle? Because I just don't see it as plausible.
It's probably. Let me. I don't know that there's anything that Nintendo can do to get to reach the Xbox audience. I think that there's
You can't even say that anymore because the number one Call of Duty version that was sold was on the PS4. So it's like the bro gamers are on the 4 now.
It's not that I'm saying that they're the bro gamers. I'm saying that every brand kind of has its own identity, and for better or worse, true or untrue, it is the identity that has stuck with the brand, and that is that Xbox is generally, you know, it's the Doritos of consoles. It's the extreme. It's the bro gamer console. It's the more competitive. It's supposed to be the more flashy. PlayStation has always tried to set itself up as very cinematic, very story driven, and Nintendo has been kind of a kid's console. And I don't think that the people who play Xbox, and maybe I'm greatly oversimplifying here, but I don't think that those guys are in the mindset. I mean, That's like saying taking somebody to the movies and saying, I know we wanted to see Fast and Furious, but let's go see this Pixar movie instead. There's nothing wrong with the Pixar movie, but you're
let's
not
going to see cars.
Yeah, you're not going to get somebody who wants to see machine gun explosions and car races in for something that's kiddie and cartoony, no matter how the quality of that is. So
there's a couple of parallels with games like Rocket League. Rocket League might be one of those games that spurns more like it to cross ecosystems, right?
Overwatch.
So Rocket League, huh?
Overwatch as well.
Oh well. Overwatch won't come to the Switch. I highly doubt Blizzard is going to make that, port that. But Rocket League is going to come there. And then they can play with Xbox guys, right? I don't know about PC, but I know Xbox and Switch should be able to play each other, which is pretty interesting. Like that may spurn a whole other type of multiplayer on there that allow games that can run in the capacity of the Switch to crossplay in a whole different ecosystem. And maybe Sony will play nice and let it in there too. I don't know. But I'm looking at the Switch lineup, even some of the TBA stuff. They must have made a deal with NIS and XSEED because they got a ton of games that I used to see on that were pretty much in the realm of PlayStation coming to the Switch. The Fate Accela game. That Knights of Azure game that it's been on PlayStation for a while. That's coming. They got some indie games. Siberia. I don't know who, like they dug that up from 2001 or something. But that's coming to Switch. Oh,
Constructor.
Sidemora.
To be fair, there is a new Siberia game that came out this year.
I know. I was like, who dug that up? You know.
Yeah.
I haven't played that in years on PC. And this intersperses all this stuff. They got Xenoblade coming out. And then also Sega's supporting them because they got Sonic Mania and Sonic Forces going to come out for Switch also.
They don't have Persona 5, though.
They don't have Persona 5. To be fair, the bigger stuff they don't have, but this list is littered with some medium-sized titles and a lot of indie titles. I mean, I even saw Owlboy on here.
Oh, hell, shit.
There's a Black Sad game on here. And I'm like, they're making a Black Sad game? Like, you know, so I'm kind of surprised what I'm seeing here. I mean, maybe the behind the scenes they have made more deals. I see XSEED and NIS coming up in the publishers list. Team 17, they put out Yooka-Laylee, right? I'm pretty sure that's them. But they have a bunch of other games they're publishing.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. About that, let me ask you this. Yeah, now I was actually just hold that real quick. Okay, because we're talking about Rocket League and stuff. Okay, that's great that you have a game that's like for more general audiences that aren't just Nintendo audiences. But don't you think the fact that the chat is just a fucking mess on a Switch is gonna hurt that shit? You know?
Oh yeah, that's a huge problem. There's no getting around that. I don't care who apologizes for that nonsense. Like that.
What was that? I missed it.
What happened, Brett?
My mic cut out. What did you say the problem was?
The chat shit. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because basically, because I'm like, okay, you're getting Rocket League, which is a great game. You saw how well it did on PS4 and Xbox. Okay, it's coming to Switch, which is also great. But if you can't chat with people easily, that kind of hurts the game, you know?
I've said it before and I say it again. If they'd be smart, and that there's a big asterisk there, they could put a Bluetooth receiver that hooks into the USB port in the back of the console, and then you could just have a Bluetooth headset. They would probably charge an obscene amount, probably a $100 headset that is worth $50 and is Bluetooth compatible, but they have at least an option there. And I don't think that the train wreck that they have now is going to be their final solution.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to ask. So, but Brett, what were you going to say before?
Oh, shit.
I shouldn't have cut you off. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, it happens.
But, yeah, again,
I remember.
Go ahead.
So with the sprinkling of, like, all these little titles and even some kind of medium titles, do you think that if Nintendo goes through a release lull last year, like they have a pretty strong, quote-unquote, strong first year, and then, you know, a lot of consoles kind of go through this, you know, lag until they hit the two-year mark, and I expect to see a similar slump in Switch. What the thing that I think may make this difference is two key factors. One, if they have big titles that they can show us anything for, Smash, Bayonetta, Metroid, any kind of Pokemon game. My first question would be, can just the announcement and the showing of these games, even if they're being shown a ways off, be enough to carry the system, especially when you consider the fact that the system is going to continue to have supply problems? Like, it's still going to be a scarcity. So I think maybe that combined with the fact that they've announced some things and there's some things that you want to play, like, even if they're not coming out with a big title every other month, they might be able to ride that wave of hype for a little bit until they can get some more strong titles out. And again, they might be hiding shit from us. They've been playing, they seem to be playing things close to the vest. I mean, Chris made a good point on that. Like, they could have made a whole bunch of backdoor deals that we don't know about. Although the announcement of Pokemon and the announcement of Metroid, when they've clearly got like next to nothing to show up for them, would indicate otherwise. That doesn't scream we're hiding a lot of stuff. That screams, you know, we're showing you everything that we've got.
One thing I do want to say about the whole scarcity thing, as we've talked about on the show, it's mainly because Apple is, they have first dibs at like shit for LCDs and stuff. This is what I heard. I can't confirm yet, but this is what I heard. Apparently this fall, around September, so Apple is going to switch from LEDs to OLEDs for the phones. If that happens, going to free up LCDs for Switch, so it's possible that these shortages won't be an issue by the end of the year. If that happens, man, that's going to be very, very good for Nintendo, because now they could actually produce enough consoles to get into people's hands, you know. So it may not be an issue for too long, you know. September's just around the corner, so it could happen sooner than you think, guys. So keep that in mind. This whole shortage shit is not going to last forever, you know. And I've said that too. If they could actually manufacture enough Switches this holiday, it's going to outsell the PS4 and Xbox. I guarantee you. I don't care if the Xbox One X is new. It's a new system, right? The fucking Switch has games on it. Xbox really doesn't. Let's just be honest, you know? So yeah, the manufacturing stuff, I'm not going to worry too much about that. In a month or two, that's not going to be an issue if this turns out to be true.
But, go ahead, you know, the thing is that, okay, they're making all this additional money off of what? Because they're not doing it exactly off of Switches. So what do you think is that?
What are they making off of then?
I mean, come okay. If this thing is not this thing is still, well, it ran up to second place, right?
What,
you know, the Switch is on second is went up to second place as far as console sales, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. PlayStation's still fucking destroying it.
But the thing is, this still, how is it that they're able to make even, you know, how are they still able to make profit off of this? I think it's really just the games that are just selling the most out of this, because how are you able to make a profit if your console is not even, you know, there's not even enough consoles out there?
Yeah. Chris, can you answer that one?
Sorry. What?
Yeah. Manny wants to know, basically Manny wants to know, is Nintendo actually making a profit off Switch sales or off of software? Cause it's like, how, if the Switch is essentially in second place, how is it still making a profit? Even though I'm like, of course you can still make
a profit. Oh, yeah, it's making a profit because, like I showed you with operating profit, it's you take your gross sales, right, and you subtract all your cost of production, shipment, marketing, all that stuff, and then netting total profit. Now that number is everything, right? So lumped in there is software sales, mobile sales, and any licensing stuff that they've done. But yeah, if I had to break it down, I'd say yeah. On each Switch, they're making a profit. Every system, there's no question. The way they priced it, there's no question they're making money off of each system.
So which means that the actually making them is relatively cheap, because they're probably using some old stuff. Like, you know, that Tegra is pretty old, right?
Yeah, I mean, so. Nvidia already produced an APU for that with the Shield. Right, so that was already proven tech, and they already did it.
Didn't somebody pretty much break down that if you take all the components apart from the Switch, the thing essentially costs $150 to manufacture? I think it was something along those lines. So they're making a lot of money off that shit. Yeah. You know,
wasn't there money spent on Joy-Cons too, though?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about everything, Joy-Cons, everything.
Well, I mean, the R&D for Joy-Cons might have cost some, but now for manufacturing. I mean, notice they put in foam for the Bluetooth antenna extension, right? They're just using foam. They're not using like actual metals for that stuff. So it's cheap. It's cheap stuff, but you know, it works. So
essentially, they've done what they usually do. They put out a product that's a pretty much, you know, a cheap product to develop, you know, to create, which maximizes their profit.
Right. The screen's not made of glass; it's plastic. So they're not spending money on Gorilla Glass. They're not spending money on using copper or, you know, another conductive material for Bluetooth antennas. They're using conductive foam. There's cost cutting all over the place. Obviously, NVIDIA had the APU manufacturing down to a science because they had two revisions of the Shield. So, yeah, it's very cost effective to make this system.
Yeah, so they're definitely making money off it, you know. All right, do we have anything else to say about Switch? I think we kind of covered it. Very interesting. Again, I still question what's going to happen with this thing after this year. And again, just quickly going back to the whole manufacturing thing, if they make enough of these, right, I still am going to say it'll outsell Xbox and PlayStation, but I believe if they make enough of these, everyone that wanted to buy one will buy one. So those sales are going to drop dramatically after that.
Yeah, I feel like that might happen too, where it's like once they have enough of these things out there, that means that everybody who's buying it is going to buy it already. So now the question is, if everybody who's bought it, who already wanted it, has it now, how do you keep that, you know, how do you get the next wave of people?
Isn't that true for any system now?
Yeah, it's true for any system.
Well, the thing is that
with this system, it's unique because it's in such high demand and there's not enough of it that it makes it even more desirable. Understand? That's why it's different.
It'll reach a plateau, but I don't think it'll, like, you know, just like there's a person every day who buys a PlayStation, there'll still be a person every day who buys a Switch.
I'm sure there's a person that'll buy, but the thing is that how do you continue to keep that interest high? You understand me?
It's gonna be up to third party some of these big name titles.
That's gonna be a problem. Once they already have captured all the people, you know, you have your first adopters, then you have, you know, the people that, you know, can't get it yet because it's not available yet. So once all those people have gotten it, how do you get the next part of it is how do you get more people in? And that's the same exact problem that the Wii U had. The Wii had, where essentially all those early adopters bought it, right? Then grandma and grandpa found out that they can play games, you know, by just waggling their hands around. But they only, the thing is that then it hit that plateau and then everything dropped to the bottom.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're not going to make that mistake again. And the inroad when I showed you that graph, that the fiscal year 2010 and the downswing of everything was that Nintendo basically at that point, after Wii Fit, they ignored all core gamers, right? That was a tipping point where they're like, we don't need core gamers. We have just expanded the blue ocean and we're just going to make these evergreen titles and whatnot. And so you have that downswing because people became disinterested. And people were buying the system, even though the Wii was selling, you know, in insane amounts, right? Were just stopping with Wii Sports and didn't buy anything after that. They didn't buy into Wii Play or Wii Fit or whatever. And, you know, those who were buying Wii Fit didn't buy anything after that. They weren't interested in the No More Heroes or Mad World or Mario Kart or anything because you had these older gamers. You expanded the market so much into people who are not interested in gaming, only interested in this one aspect that they could do yoga with the Wii or whatever, you know? So that came to pass. They doubled down on it with the Wii U that, you know, and we see what happened with that system. I don't need to say anything else about that. So they're not going to do that again, like a third time. So now I see on this publishing list, like they've definitely cut deals. They're getting RPGs from Square. They're getting stuff from NIS, XSEED, and things like that. So they're putting a lot of RPGs that are pretty much in the domain of Sony are coming now to this thing. So they made some deals, and they're getting some indie games. Even Owlboy is coming to Switch. And that is not coming to anything else. It has been only on PC this entire time. I don't see it have a release pending for PS4 or Xbox, but it's coming to Switch. So they're doing something, you know?
Yeah, that's true. All right, I think we've pretty much covered that.
We have one more thing to say. This is for Brett. I'm playing now. This is you gloating.
Ah, that's good stuff.
Fantastic. All right, let's move on here. Some gaming news, man. Okay, this actually happened a while ago, but it hasn't gone away. So I think it's time we finally talk about it. The whole controversy with Crackdown 3. Okay, so just after, actually during E3, they showed some footage of the game, right? And people noticed that, you know, it's a little bit of a watchdog situation. Graphics have been downgraded. Now, you know, obviously you could be like, oh, yeah, but it's cel-shaded. No, yeah, it's cel-shaded, but it looked way better when they originally showed this shit 3 years ago, right? Then recently at San Diego Comic-Con, they showed the game again, right? And it was one of the most embarrassing, like, situations you could think of. Like, on the one hand, you had Larry Herb with one of the developers playing the game, and, like, the physics were all fucked up with the game. Like, cars were piling on top of each other for no reason. And they were like, oh, yeah, you know, we wanted our physics to react realistically. It's like, cars don't do that. They don't dry hump each other like that, you know? And then the worst part is they had the girl who's playing the main character in Star Wars Battlefront. She was playing with some C-list celebrity. Like, no one – okay, she was so C-list, nobody in her own home would know who the fuck she was, right? So she's playing this game, and this bitch didn't know what the fuck she was doing. She's like, oh, where's the jump button? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? She didn't know what was going on. She didn't know that you could move and move the, like, move the character and the camera at the same time. Embarrassing, right? So now, like, a lot of people, you know, the Xbox guys are obviously, like, really upset over the way the game is being presented. And obviously the Sony ponies are gloating and shit. But I'm like, how do you, like, okay, if this is your marquee game for the year, essentially, right? How do you have people who don't even know how to play fucking games show your shit off like that? It's crazy. You know,
well, it's because they're using the usual what we call marketing bullshit, which is essentially you get some famous person to play your game because essentially people may know this person and then they may tune in. That's the stupid thing. I remember years ago when I worked at 4Kids Productions. Those are the guys that translated Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon. So we had this card game called Chaotic, right? And at the time, we were trying the marketing guys were trying to drum up business for the card game. So what they do is their best idea is to get the kid from Heroes to sit at the booth and play the game and do signings. What does Heroes have to do with Chaotic, the card game? Has absolutely nothing to do with Chaotic, the card game. The reason why they did it is because they wanted to attract people to the booth, and being that they saw that what is his name? I can't remember that kid's name from Heroes. The one who had the he had like some sort of powers. I don't know. Anyway, they wanted because he was on a show that was hot at the time. They figured it would attract people to the booth and might want to buy the game. Unfortunately, it didn't work.
Yeah,
for obvious reasons. And that's the same reason why Microsoft is doing with you know that one famous-ish person. Because they figure, okay, this person's somewhat hot at this point in time. Okay, maybe we can get people to look at this thing. Even though the biggest problem with that sort of situation is that person does not sell to fucking gamers. Who are the audience that Crackdown is going to be for?
Well, Terry Crews is actually in it. So they were hyping that up.
Terry Crews is in Overwatch as well.
All right, here's my question, right, about that. Terry Crews is in the game. We know Terry Crews is a gamer. Why didn't you have him demo the fucking game?
Yo, man, he was at the Overwatch booth because probably Blizzard was playing him shitloads of money.
I guess that's what, because I'm like, think about it. I'm like, okay.
To promote their one character, Doomhand.
Yeah, but it just makes no sense. Like, you're going to have a woman that where's the jump button? I'm like, your jump button is in the same spot. It's in 99% of games. The hell is wrong with you? Yeah, the funny thing is, the girl next to her, you know, the star of Star Wars, at the end of it, she got kind of annoyed and she took the controller from her and started playing the game. You know, I'm like, okay, she knows what she's doing, you know?
Yeah, it's sad that they had to do something like they tried to pull a little something like that to try to get people to view the game. But the other thing is that it's like, you know, Crackdown's pretty close to launch. and we're seeing like glitchy gameplay on a thing. Now, mind you, this is the first time we've actually seen Crackdown actually playing.
The real Crackdown, that's right.
The real Crackdown playing. Like, we've only seen trailers. It wasn't even on the E3 show floor. It was behind closed doors. So this is the first time anybody's actually gotten to see a real playthrough of Crackdown, and we're having all these sorts of issues. I don't know, guys. I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, a quick correction: Terry Crews is not in Overwatch. Doomfist is not him. Just
okay.
Quick correction.
Yeah. Yo, man, Terry Crews. You know what he was doing? He was designing furniture. That's what he was doing.
I thought he was building another PC.
Maybe he's like, man, I don't play with that Xbox. I don't have a PC.
Right? He moved on. Like, I'm going to play me some Crackdown on my PC. But yeah, it's just another one of those situations. It's like, damn, you never really believe the first time you see a game. I guess that's a good way of looking at things, because these people will lie to you, you know? But my thing is like, okay, if you know your game is not going to look like that in the end, why are you showing it off like that? You know,
well, like, the thing is that it's like anything. You want to show the best. You want to put your best.
I understand, but you're going to get exposed anyway in the end. You know.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, like, in this situation, the games that are being shown, especially so far in advance, obviously those things they're showing are just concept videos.
Yeah,
that's not real gameplay. In fact. I've been watching. There's some YouTube guys out there that find old builds of games. Some of these guys find builds of games that were, played on like the E3 screen, where it's like, oh my god, you know, you get to see them play it live. But you realize these demos are only built on a checkpoint system. So if you walk to one location, this certain thing happens. So it's already all set up.
Wait, isn't that just video games today?
No, it's even more than that. In other words, it's like it's a very like there was a one. It was like I think it was for a Call of Duty. I think it was from one of the Ghost games.
Call of Duty.
So there's all these different things that they show inside of this supposed live demo, which are all just set up specifically to happen. And as long as the developer follows the same route all the damn time, everything happens exactly at the same moments at every single time. So these things you can't officially if you see. Live gameplay on an E3 stage like a Microsoft or a Sony, there is even a good chance that the thing that they're playing is only built as far as the demo is going to go. So, like, let's say if you decide to break, let's say for the sake of conversation, let's talk about a PlayStation game like the new Days Gone. Let's say that demo that you saw right there, that demo, all it is that specific demo. Every single thing that happens there. And when they hit certain points, always happens exactly the same way, so that the developer can instantly just know what to do and put the best foot forward for that.
I just assume that with every game at this point.
No, but the thing is that, like, you know, everybody sees these things on E3 show floor, on a stage. They're like, oh yeah, they're playing live gameplay. Officially, they're only playing a section of gameplay that's specifically meant for the show. So it's almost as bad as making a pre-rendered sequence, except you're playing it.
Well, yeah, at least the only difference there is you know that it's running on a game engine and it's not just a pre-rendered video.
It's running on a game engine, but the thing is that it's not running on a full game engine. It's not running with the full AI. It's not running with, that's why you have those sorts of situations. So you have a game like Crackdown or like Watch Dogs where they're running in the best possible conditions that you could ever run it in.
Yeah, but isn't this just a reinvented version of the conversation that we used to have of is this actual gameplay or CGI video? I mean, they don't show pre-made video for video games that much anymore. And when they do, it's very obvious, like, oh, this isn't in the game. But for those of us that are older, there used to be times in which, like, they'd render video that looked very close to the game and something so that it looked like that they were playing a video game. They even have the UI and everything up there, but it'd be a video. And I think that this is probably just the evolution of that.
Yeah, it is. It is the evolution of that. So now we've actually seen the actual Crackdown game playing, and we see all the issues that it has. which is I mean, obviously, you know, if you have like a game like breaking down on the stage, that's also not very good either. But then again, Uncharted did it, and everybody's like, "Oh God, it's real time!" You know?
Yeah, but yeah, it is like, this is way worse than the Uncharted showing, though.
The Uncharted thing just kind of froze, and they just restarted the damn thing. This is just like you take that Uncharted sequence, right, and then all of a sudden you start having people fall out of the sky. Yeah. All those open world issues, you know.
Yeah, Nathan's leg starts moving funny or something. Yeah. But yeah, Crackdown, man, it ain't looking too good. My thing is, this is what I said on Twitter, just to, you know, jab at people. I'm like, I don't really care about Crackdown 3 because I got Agents of Mayhem next month.
So and that's not doing so great. I've heard a bunch of things because it doesn't have any co-op. And it's from what I'm hearing, it's just standalone. And a lot of people are upset because they're like, well, you have to always build a team. So if you're always building a team, that means it just seems like it's more suited for a co-op experience with friends.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because when I demoed the game, when the guy told me it was just single player, I was like, oh, thank God. Because I thought it was just going to be like a fucking co-op game the whole time, you know?
I don't get it. You don't like that option? It's not that it's needed. It's an option.
Yeah, it's fine. But, you know, I'm not upset that it's not there, you know?
This is a conversation or an argument you will not win.
No, I just
don't. I've been down this road with Tony before. The answer is yes.
Like Tony, who's so social, it just doesn't make sense.
Gaming is different, man. It's personal. It's going back a little bit, because when I was waiting for my turn to play the game, the two guys behind me were talking about it. It's like, yo, man, this game, Adam, just like he's like, yo, this game's gonna be crazy, man. It's multiplayer, they got co-op and shit. And I'm like, it is since when? So when I got to my, you know, to my turn, I talked to him. I'm like, is this game multiplayer? And he was like, no, it's just single player. I'm like, okay, good. I'm like, man, I was worried for a second, you know. But
that's the thing, that I don't consider co-op as a multiplayer.
Like, but it is Ghost multiplayer.
Like Ghost Recon is not multiplayer. I can do it all by myself. But I have the option.
Player game. We're getting off topic here, by the way.
The thing is, like, you want a co-op that's kind of like Gears of War, where you can have have your buddies jump in as the other player
controls.
The option to play the non-player characters that are, you know, hanging around with you, right?
That's the same thing Ghost Recon. It's optional. I don't need anybody. I could do it all by myself.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm looking more forward to fucking Agents of Mayhem than I am to Crackdown.
Hopefully Microsoft at least has another build of the game that isn't as messed up and really shows people what this game is all about. Because, you know, what it's starting to look like, it's just starting to look like a generic Crackdown game from, like, you know, Crackdown 2 Reloaded, you know what I mean?
Yeah, hey, man, what do you think about the graphics, man? Because they've definitely not as good looking as they were before, you know?
I always felt, here's the thing, I've never liked the aesthetic of the Crackdown games, even all the way back to the first two. I feel like it always looked a little bit generic, and I kind of wanted them to kind of push it a little bit more, and it just seems like it's a little bit more of the same thing. The biggest thing, the biggest part of interest for that game, I thought, was the destructible environments, but now we see that it's not even doing that. Cause I was going to say, okay, you know, granted the game looks a little bit, you know, weird, which is just, I guess that's the way it's going to look, but at least, you know what, you can blow the fuck out of a building and it'll stay blown up with the power of the cloud.
Yeah.
In multiplayer. So which means, like, you know, you can't even do any of that other stuff that you really wanted to do in the game. So what is the kind of need for this Crackdown game, other than it's a recognizable name?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing different in this Crackdown game that is so revolutionary that we can only do in this generation of game, other than just having Crackdown 2 Reloaded?
Destructible environments, man.
What are we, like, the Crackdown games? I can't remember the story being very good. Are these characters even compelling? I don't know. I mean, all we know is Terry Crews is in the game. So,
yeah, go watch Expendables.
Yeah, we can watch Expendables, or we can watch 100 Old Spice commercials.
I think Terry Crews. What's going to be important with the Terry Crews is not just this likeness, but is he in it? Like, are we going to hear his funny comments? You know, that's what's really going to make the Terry Crews character.
The thing is, again, we haven't seen him. We just saw Terry Crews, real Terry Crews, on a roof.
Well, we've seen a character model of him, and his character model looks way better than anything in the game. Hmm. You know, it's all detailed and shit. It's crazy. But, you know, we'll see.
It's also that kind of create, you know, like what I call creator character, kind of low resolution creator character mode. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell a character has been created because they don't have that same quality as the actual characters that are specifically made for the game. I wish they could get to that point where you can make a convincing character instead of a fucking Cro-Mag.
Yeah. You know? All right, man. Let's move on here. Okay, so this one I kind of wrestle on. Should we talk about the throwdown? But I think it's good considering, you know, we are a podcast. We're on YouTube and all that. And also it leads me to a larger point I'll bring up at the end of the discussion. So there's been some drama surrounding Angry Joe, right? So this week he put out a video saying that he is going to put his, you know, famous angry reviews, video game reviews, on hold until September or whenever, right, when Destiny 2 comes out. And he also disabled comments and likes on his videos. His Patreons are fucking pissed off. They're like, listen, I pay you for these things. You're not giving them to me. I'm pulling my shit. So I just want to, you know, talk to you guys. I see both angles, right? But I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. And Manny, I'm going straight to you because you were very passionate about this.
I'm going to say this, like, I mean, have any of you guys seen any of Angry Joe's? I mean, obviously, I'm sure Chris has seen them, but you ever see how much work that dude puts into one of those videos? Like for every single game that comes out, like, you know, pretty close to release, he puts out this review. He's got all kinds of character work. It's got, like, he does a blue screen. He adds all kinds of, you know, special effects and all kinds of shit on top of that. Now, that shit takes a long time to do. And to do that for almost every single, what do they call it, like, main release game, it must be an incredible amount of time to do it. So this guy is saying, okay, we're in the summer, right? I'm going to take a break. What's wrong with that?
Nothing, but do you still get paid when you stop working?
Do I get paid when I stop working? If I go on vacation time and I have a full-time gig, yes, I do. But I don't have that.
Well, okay, but that's insulated to you by your employer. I think this would be more akin to, like, I make my own money, right? I make money directly from the people who support me. So if I stop working and I stop providing a service, I can't reasonably expect to continue to get paid for that.
He hasn't officially stopped working. He's just only put those reviews on hold for a bit to kind of.
So he's doing all the
reviews. He's still making content. The only thing is that obviously the angry reviews or whatever he calls them are like the main thing that for a lot of people. He even said it himself on the video. He's like, yeah, you know, I need some time. It's good to have a little bit of time to recuperate and do all this sort of stuff. You know, the thing is that summer is really considered the kind of dry spell era until, you know, this year. But in general, it's considered the dry spell era. So I don't blame the guy for at least wanting to kind of recuperate and not have to worry about putting, you know, editing and putting all kinds of special effects on one of those videos.
Well, absolutely. Okay, where I'm coming from isn't that people should yell at him or be angry at him, but, like, look, if he stops producing the content that you want, stop supporting his Patreon.
And he said exactly that. He's like, you know, I know a lot of you guys really love those reviews. He's like, listen, if you don't, you know, I need that time. So why, you know, if you feel like you want to stop supporting me on there, that's fine. But, you know, I want to at least take this time to do this and then come back fresh after that. But I feel like when we come to these sorts of, in our day and age where everybody expects things now, they don't even consider the amount of fucking time that it takes to do these things.
Oh, I absolutely.
Or the fact that a lot of us don't even have time, have that buffer to at least take a vacation or be able to, you know, just take a little bit of time to yourself.
I'm straddling the line right in the middle. Like, don't get me wrong. I think everybody should, like, look, here's the deal. The extent of which you are allowed to bitch is canceling your patron subscription until he starts producing content that you want. If you never were a patron subscriber or supporter, then shut the fuck up. At the same time, to him, yeah, you are absolutely allowed to take time off. You are absolutely allowed to do whatever you want, but don't necessarily expect people to continue to support you through your patron. Like, look, I would fully imagine if he said, look, I'm going to have a little bit of time off, he's got a little bit of cushion. And he can use that. But I don't think that if somebody's not providing content that you necessarily need to keep supporting them. I don't see why this has to be an argument or a big issue at all. It should just be like, look, if you don't like the content that he's not making, then don't support. And he's not in turn going to say anything about it.
That's exactly it. So I don't even know why this is even an issue with people. It's like, the thing is that money talks. If you obviously if you decide to take all of your you lose a bunch of subscribers, that means eventually you have to go back to doing it, which is fine. But the thing is that he plainly said, I'm taking a vacation. I'm taking a little vacation. We're going to take a little break from these big ass videos with special effects and all kinds of other stuff. We're still going to do little like podcast things where I'm just sitting in a room and talking. But for now, we're not going to be doing this for a little bit. But it's going to be back right when Destiny 2 comes out, which is officially the biggest release.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I will say, I don't, when we get down to like how much time it takes, like, yes, it absolutely is a full-time job, but also this is his full-time job. So yeah, and everybody's, look, if you work hard, you deserve a small vacation at some point in the year. And just because he doesn't have a boss that he reports directly, he has fans that he reports to, doesn't make it any different. So yeah, if you're there for the angry reviews, I'm sure he's expecting this. Pull your patron support and then re-support him once he starts doing Destiny. I'm sure that is part of the game plan. But for Christ's sake, give the man a break. Let him take a vacation. Let him enjoy his vacation. He's not beholden to produce content for anybody. It is a choice and it is an exchange that we all freely make. That, look, you can either go to his site, you can watch his advertisements, you can help him generate ad revenue, you can support his patron. Or you cannot. And even then, like, so just don't visit his site. Don't watch the views. Like, if he's not producing content, he'll probably have a drop in visitors. But again, he probably anticipated this, and he is fine with that. So let the man take his vacation.
Yeah, I do want to give the counterpoint. And just before I do that, let me just state, I'm not a fan of Angry Joe. I'm not saying that because I don't like him. I just don't watch his stuff. You know, I tried to, but I'm like, it was too – hold on, let me finish, Manny. So my thing is it's too – overly produced. I don't really like that type of stuff. You know, I like just people in front of a camera talking. But so with that said, right, Manny, do you want
to
just
I'm going to add to that. I was like, yes, I also do not watch his video, and I also believe that his stuff is overly produced.
Okay, so with that said, you know, I can understand why some of his fans would be upset. I'm going to just, you know, bring it internally, right? Imagine if we were to decide, right, throw down, right? And we were just getting hypotheticals, obviously. We were getting Patreon money. We decided, you know what? For 2 months, we're not going to do any throwdown podcast. We're just going to do Otanime instead, right? I think people would be justified in getting pissed off at us. So I could understand that, but at the same time, yeah, I know you would be happy, but I could understand that type of rage. But at the same time, if you feel mad, like Brett said, just pull your Patreon money and come back when he's giving you your actual shit, right? But, you know, one of the main reasons I want to talk about this is because I always find it, like, interesting. And this is, like, just with artists in general, right? Like, you became big for a specific reason, but you're now not doing that anymore. Can you honestly expect those same people to be on board with you where you're no longer giving them the stuff they got on board with you in the first place? You know what I mean? Granted, he is not expecting that. He said, hey, if you don't want to support me, that's fine. But there are actual people out there that believe, oh, you know, you've been with me since the beginning. You need to be with me ride or die. I don't really subscribe to that sort of mentality because people come to, you know, people like us or artists or movies or whatever because they give them a specific thing. You don't give them that specific thing, people are going to dip out. So I understand that point. But the whole anger thing is stupid. Okay, he's not giving it to you. Wait, just come back later, you know? So that's what I mean. I see both sides of the situation, you know?
But I feel like that's a bigger problem with the internet in general. I feel like
tell everybody here specifically what you told me about the people whining about this.
I definitely feel like a lot of it's just a lot of people that he also might have also created this sort of situation on his own, where essentially on how often he puts out these reviews, they come out pretty damn often.
Like, he goes one step better or one step further, Manny. Like, he actually said at the start of the year, because I follow his content, mm-hmm. and he said at the start of the year that he's going to have a strict schedule to which he will stick to, and he has mm-hmm. not stuck to that schedule all year. Mm-hmm. He has been incredibly bad to stick to that schedule. So I think that has a bigger part to play than everything else. Like,
so he hasn't earned a vacation.
Well, it's not that he hasn't earned. Like, okay, the guy works hard. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I feel like his reviews are better than, like, 95% of all reviews out there. Because, like, he actually puts in the time and effort to explain why. Whereas other reviews just say crap like, hey, it's good because it's shiny. Like, no. Explain why it's good, you know? Mm. Give me a reason to care, like, why you think this game is good. So I think that in that aspect, like, he does work hard. But at the same time, if you say that you're going to be keeping to a strict schedule because you know that you don't stick to it, and then you then go on to not stick to it. Like, I think that incredibly, not insulting, but it's definitely frustrating for fans, because they're like, okay, cool. You know what? This guy is turning stuff around. He's going to like switch things up, and then he'll turn around and be like, okay, the schedule that I said I was going to do, I'm not doing anymore. And now I'm going to take some time off. So being a fan, that is incredibly frustrating. And anyone that wants to pull the Patreon money for that reason, I don't blame them. Because on one hand, you have a system like Patreon, which is meant to encourage creators to create. And then you have a creator who's not creating and has offered out a schedule to which he said that he will stick to, but then has not stuck to, and then now is going to take some time off to further not create. So I feel like they are fully justified in their like pulling up Patreon money, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely believe that if they're not doing what you wanted them to do, definitely pull out. That's it. We don't need. I mean, to be honest, you don't need to get crazy over it. To be honest, you know, like what? No amount of yelling on the internet makes anybody do anything.
Yeah, but you know, and by the way, man, I'm going to call you because you didn't say it. You said that all these people complaining are just a bunch of whiny millennials.
Well, hell yeah. Fuck yeah. Like, I want this shit now. Well, you know, how long does this take? How long does this shit take?
That's true, because a lot of his comments, a lot of people are angry. Not the Patreon guys, but these other guys literally were making the argument that they pay for internet, therefore he owes them content. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm like, yes, because he's getting that sweet Time Warner money, right? Or Fios. Like, the fuck? Like, the logic that some of these guys use was absolutely ridiculous. They literally, some guys were saying they pay him with their time. Like, time watching the video. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, like, I'm sure they don't have pop-up blocker, you know.
This is why he turned those comments off, man. That's why.
That's the epitome of fucking, entitlement. Yeah. Wow.
So how many subscribers does he have for Patreon, though? Like, is it a big amount? Like,
how many patrons does this guy have?
But I know you can go to usually on their if you go to their Patreon, they'll tell you how many.
Yeah, I know on YouTube he has like, what's it, 3 million subscribers, something insane, you know. But yeah, that, you know, I just find it interesting. Everybody's in such an uproar over this. It's like, just pull your money and shut the fuck up.
Yeah, we don't need to get that crazy over it. It's just like, okay, so just pull it. On his Patreon, it doesn't actually tell you how many subscribers he's got.
Well, actually, what do you guys think about the fact that he disabled comments and likes and stuff?
No, I told you some of the comments. If I saw some of those comments, too, I know what. There's two sides to this, but man, he gets
some. He pulled Anita Sarkeesian, man.
but he gets some degenerate comments, man. Like, no joke. Like, some of these people say some really horrible shit to him. And honestly, like Brian said, I've watched plenty of his reviews. He does put in a lot of work into those, right? Yeah, he didn't follow his schedule. He's absolutely right. He didn't follow his schedule at all. Then he just announced, like, hey, I like this vacation thing. I'm going to take some more time off. So I can understand why people were upset. And then, you know, he kind of went, well, I do what I want. And then that just pissed them off even more. But, you know, I mean, honestly, like, I mean, even PewDiePie a long time ago disabled his comments. I mean, he's getting some shit, but that didn't stop his channel from growing into the stratosphere.
Yeah, that is true. You know, no, cause you know how, you know, the usual shit happens. It's like, oh, that's it. Angry Joe's done. Everyone's gonna leave him now.
Oh no,
no.
People love exaggerating shit. I swear, yeah, man.
Well, you know, it's never a middle level.
Nope.
It's always like it's always like it's at 11. Them. Yeah, it's always like it's always like it's off or it's on. It's never in the middle. It's like, okay, you're just a, I always like feel like it's like people forgot how to be disappointed, you know, just normal disappointed. Man, this is disappointing, and they just move on.
You said this before. Where are the levels, man? It's yeah. It's just on or off. It's at 0 or 11 now.
Yep, that's it.
It's like, oh man, they changed Captain America. I'm gonna fucking blow up Marvel Comics.
Yo, hold on a second, bro.
Yeah. You know? How about you just stop buying it?
Dude, just don't support the book. And you know what? Marvel will see that, and then all of a sudden, hey, everything's back to normal. Captain America's still the same guy. He's, you know, he's wearing his third right in blue. Blah blah blah. Yeah. So you know, people forget that this stuff is supposed to be fun. And, you know, at the same time, if it goes the direction that you don't want it to go, just drop it. You don't need to come back. You don't need to blame them. You know, it's like people do these things. They do these, you know, when it comes to media stuff, they do these things, obviously, to get more readers or more attention and stuff like that. But if it's not going in the direction you want, just drop it. You don't even need to say anything about it, to be honest.
When you hear something really radical and crazy, these people may not know this. Dropping something is a lot easier than complaining on the internet for weeks on end.
Exactly. Yeah,
seriously.
It's like, what the fuck? Yeah, you're right. Here's the thing. I think we may be getting to a point where we have to go beyond Spinal Tap and go to a 12. This is insane now.
Yeah, it's like, Angry Joe's not going to stick it to his thing. All right, drop it. That's
it. Yeah, how hard is it to hit unsub and walk away, man?
Yeah,
and on Patreon, you know, you can hit that delete pledge if you want. Mm-hmm. You don't need to say nothing. Just like, hey, he's not making videos. Done. I'm out. And nobody needs to know. And then one day it's like, hey, you stop watching Angry Joe? Yeah, he's not making videos. So, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, now it's this age. It's like, now everybody's so, like, they'll threaten them or they'll make a video. You know what?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you mean a reaction? I'm gonna do a reaction video.
I'm gonna do a reaction video to Angry Joe.
Fuck you, Angry Joe, you son of a bitch. All right, man, let's move on, dude. Last thing here. Oof, man. Mighty Number 9 continues to disappoint, man. Okay, so I don't know if we talked about this last week. So basically, they're just now shipping the fucking boxes to people, right? Mm-hmm. So some people are getting their boxes, and the fucking manuals don't fit in the box.
Well, here's the correction on that. It fits in the American box.
In the American box, but here's the thing.
But it doesn't fit in the Japanese box.
Something that was never stated. Something that was never stated in the Kickstarter. Because they specifically said, your game will come with a booklet inside. They never said, asterisk, if you get the Japanese one, the shit ain't fitting.
Well, you know? Yeah, because what they decided to do is because they decided to go with one specific size of video game manual box, manual size. And they didn't decide, okay, let's make it a little bit smaller so that it fits. In fact, that manual size is actually over the size of the manual that you would normally get on a Nintendo cartridge, which is what they're kind of replicating.
Yeah.
A Nintendo cartridge manual is actually a lot smaller than that. So it's larger than a Famicom one, and it's way larger than the American Nintendo one. So they're both wrong. They're wrong on both accounts. The other thing on that was the book was supposed to be full color.
I was about to say that. It's supposed to be full color. This shit is not in color. It is not in color, man.
You know, it's in color, but it's only in like, it's in blues. So it's like black, white, and blue.
Technically, it's color.
It's color, but they said full color, which meant every single page is in color. I just don't understand a lot of that stuff. They made these decisions, these promises even before anything was even produced. And it's just now when did Mighty Number 9 had been in development since 2012, right?
It's been in development since this was the throwdown. That's how long ago this shit was.
We were the throwdown, and everybody on the people on the show were excited about the aspect of the idea of
that was the poster child for us, you know, like that was the golden child for this podcast. Look how that turned out.
I've said this before. I was not expecting the game to be great. Even in those days, I was very reserved as far as excitement.
You're always reserved, though. Come on, that's not anything.
But again, yeah, I'm always reserved because I always think about a lot of the sides of things where it's like, okay, you know, this is cool, but there is that thing. So I usually think about that too. It's like, okay, everybody's excited about this thing. What if it's a piece of shit, or what if it's just not as good as everybody's expectations?
Yeah, but you could say that about any like Metal Gear Solid game that's ever come out. Like,
yeah, I'm never. Do you ever see me insanely? Was I ever insane about Metal Gear? I mean, I love Metal Gear. I mentioned it quite a bit, but I don't. Did I even with the Phantom Pain? I even put up that question.
You can use that as a blanket statement for anything that ever.
I mean, the thing is that especially when you have something like that where it's there's so much nostalgia behind it. It even affected Yooka-Laylee and like the Tim Schafer game. I feel like people's expectations for these things are so damn high that even the game coming out and being a decent game can't even live up to those expectations. That's why I even say with what's that game? Bloodstained. You know, what me and Tony and Chris played on the show floor at E3 and on the demos that they released, it's good for what it is. But that's only a small portion of the game, and the game could definitely be not very good. There is that possibility.
Yeah, but you know me, I'm the opposite end. I was hyped in a motherfucker for Mighty Number 9. I was like, oh shit, we're getting essentially a new Mega Man game. Get to play this game, disappointed. This is what happened with me. I played Mighty Number. I'm like, I don't know about this. I ended up going to the PlayStation store and just buying the Mega Man Legacy Collection, right? It reminded me of that episode of The Simpsons where Homer goes to like an all-you-can-eat seafood diner and they didn't let him eat all he could want, right? They didn't let him have all he could eat. So he had to go fishing, you know? So when he took him to court, it's like, do these sound like the actions of a man who had all he could eat? So it's like, do these sound like... So for me, it's like, do these sound like the actions of a man who got a new Mega Man experience? I had to go play Mega Man 2 just so I could feel not upset because I was like pissed the fuck off, you know? And then the worst thing is, I didn't even get my fucking PS4 version. I got a Steam code. I didn't ask for a Steam code. I got a Steam code, you know? Sure. I couldn't even burn the game, you know? So it's like, fuck, man, you know? But.
I think that you also didn't pay attention to a lot of the stuff that that went on there, though. Like, you didn't pay attention to a lot of the emails that you would get.
I don't read that shit. Just give me the fucking game.
Yeah, well, that's probably why you got only the Steam code, because before they sent out the Steam code, they even made sure to say, hey, what version of this thing do you want?
I listed it, PS4. I specifically, when I bought the shit, I listed it as that.
Two different occasions they actually asked which version do you want.
No, if you only need to ask me once. Oh, did you mean Steam? No, I said PS4. You know, the whole thing was a fucking like debacle. It's because of that game. That was the first and last time I'll ever fucking crowdfund a game. Fuck that shit. Finish the game, then I'll judge it when it's actually out. You know, that whole, you know, watching it when the sausage is being made, fuck that shit, you know.
Well, the one thing about it is that, you know, we wouldn't be
pissed.
We wouldn't be really getting Shenmue, or we wouldn't be getting...
I didn't crowdfund that shit either.
But we wouldn't be getting Bloodstained as well. And so, there is that risk. It's always there.
And that's a risk I'm not willing to take, so I'm not crowdfunding any of that shit, you know?
There's always that risk that do it. The reason why, at least for me, the reason why I fund the ones that I fund is because I feel... I'm mostly really funding the creator to do what they want to do, whether that be a good thing or a bad thing. It's like, okay, I trust this developer. Let's see what they can do.
Well, I don't trust Inafune anymore. I'll tell you that.
Well, I tell you the one thing. Remember when everybody was getting on what's his face from Platinum Games when he started ragging on Inafune?
Yeah, he was right
about his development things. Nobody ever said sorry to that fucking guy and said, "Hey, yo, you were right about this dude."
Well, maybe they did apologize, but he blocked them all. You know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is that, like, I even defend him at the time too. I said maybe he knows something that we don't. And I'm like, Inafune was responsible for closing Clover Studios. He was head of game development at Konami at the time.
Or Capcom, so, you mean?
No, Capcom, excuse me.
So, yeah, Konami on the brain. When you said that, I was like, yeah, there might be something to this, you know, because usually, let's just be honest, Japanese guys don't really talk shit about each other like that publicly.
He literally laid into Inafune. So I'm like, okay, something's going on here. There's something bigger here. And he knew something that everybody didn't know. Well, they know now. And what happened to Concept? They got bought out by another company, and what is he doing? He's probably probably not really gonna be developing anything else.
Well, Inafune, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy, man.
They literally had two games that were designed by him that kind of crashed and burned, which is that what was that game for Xbox?
Oh, yeah, Recore.
Ooh. Oh, Recore.
Recore first, and then that other, then Mighty Number 9.
So, and I want to know how much of the Mighty Number 9 money went to Recore and that other bullshit, you know?
Well, you know, the thing is, I think a lot of it went to helping to... A lot of times these Kickstarter things are not only to develop a game, but to also help open a studio or give them a start. That's what the guys who did Yooka-Laylee did. So, but I feel like people with Yooka-Laylee aren't as pissed off with that Kickstarter as they were with the one.
See, y'all say I'm crazy for playing early access games. You motherfuckers pay for games that are still a glint in someone's eye. At least I get to pay for a game when I know it's working, functioning, and probably going to finish development.
Hey, Brett, just to be fair, Brett, hold on. I learned my fucking lesson. Never again am I doing that shit.
I learned my fucking lesson. The thing is that there is that possibility. Like, even with those games that you're like, you know, you're helping to develop, and there's a chance that those games would even never come out. I mean, how long have people been paying for fucking Overgrowth? Overgrowth is that one open world like fighting game with like anthropomorphic animal people that can like different all kinds of like you can cut their arm off and they can still fight. It's got all kinds of crazy stuff in it, and that game's been in development forever. People are still paying for that thing.
Well, yeah, but maybe they're already playing it and they're already enjoying it. Here's an interesting exercise.
There's a good chance that these things can just get stuck in development hell. We don't know. But that's why.
I disagree that. Well, and I'll use this as an opportunity to reiterate a point that I tell people a lot. A good early access game should already have the funding secured to finish the game, and you can generally tell those games by how far along they are when they release themselves into early access. They should have be reaching the end of their first alpha build, meaning everything should be working, everything should be working together, all the systems, the basic systems are in place, and then they start adding features, okay? This is the thing that a lot of people need to remember. Alpha means that the systems are done, they're adding features. Beta means that they're fixing out the bugs and fleshing out any of the problems and basically tweaking and refining it, and then it's released. So all the systems should already be in place in a good alpha, and any early release game should not be in a pre-alpha state when it releases.
It's kind of the same thing with a Kickstarter in general, where you need to have, like, especially like the more successful quick Kickstarters are usually the ones where they have a most of a semblance of something. Like, you see a lot of Kickstarters for comics that are actually successful. You see a lot of art books and stuff for artists that are already successful, because these are things that have already been designed. They're already put together, or these comics have been put together. They're just looking for assistance in actually printing the damn thing, rather than like a lot of the game development ones where it's like, I have an idea.
Yeah, I think that pretty much hits it on the head. Like, yes, if they're looking for a way to publish their game, if they're looking for, you know, feedback, because it, in all honesty, early access gaming is good because it's crowdsourcing. It's getting a bunch of people to test your game for you. And so I think it should be open to that, and you shouldn't have the game closed down to the point where you're refusing to add things that the community is really, you know, really wanting. I just lost my train of thought. Fuck it. Somebody else go.
All right. Actually, I don't think we need to say anything more about Mighty Number 9.
So we'll see what else comes along, because I supposedly had something too. That I think it was the game box I was supposed to get. So yeah, we'll see how this goes, because a lot of people have been getting them, and we'll see. I think I was supposed to get an art book. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. So long ago.
I know, right? It is crazy, man. All right, I think that's going to do it for us tonight, man. So I want to thank all you guys for watching and listening. Subscribe to Throwdown on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Throwdown Show. Links are located in the description below. Once again, our show is Tony Polanco, and tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you later, guys.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
See you, everybody.
Adam Vale.
Looks like Lucha is getting a season 4.
Woo! And Ryan Majum.
I have no fun yet. Outro this time.
We're going to disqualify you, Ryan. Wink, wink.
You will be eliminated.
Oh, man. All right, guys. We'll see you on Sunday. Later.